information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
With the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, May 16th, 2023, I'm Pat Kreitlow. Nice to have you here this morning. A very pretty morning across Wisconsin. 53 degrees up here on Lake Wissota. Wausau reporting 56, Oshkosh 55. It's 52 in both Amory and Madison. And let's see, we've got coming up this hour, instead of planes, trains, and automobiles, let's talk about cars, bikes, and tractors, because Wisconsin drivers no longer have to deal with snow plows, but they are dealing with, you know, people getting their motorcycles out for the spring and summer, and also farm machinery, especially during this planting season. So we'll talk about making sure to stay safe in some of the rural roads of Wisconsin when we talk to an agricultural agent with the UW Extension and our friend Hans Breitenmoser, and that's coming up at 7:30 this morning. We'll talk at 7:50 with Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio in the Wausau area as well. And if you have any points you'd like to share with us this morning, the studio line is 844-967-2789. And you can help Aaron Zommers and me on this next quick topic if you'd like to weigh in and tell us if we're doing anything wrong here. Aaron, I cooked up a couple of steaks yesterday, and I think I now have the way that I'm going to be making a steak perfectly from now on. I had originally moved to cast iron skillets about 2 years ago. It was one of those pandemic things. Like, I need cast iron skillets. I make all kinds of things in a cast iron skillet, and I love it. But I wasn't totally happy with simply getting the cast iron skillet as hot as humanly possible and then throwing the steak on there. It just wasn't cutting it for the thicker things. So I'm now doing something called reverse searing, which involves a little oven time prior to the cast iron skillet. And I'm enjoying it very much. Now, you, on the other hand, you might just be a throw them on the grill and whatever you get kind of person, but where are you on steak prep?
Reverse searing, huh? But I don't cook steaks very often, mostly for budget reasons.
Well, I was going to say, you probably have, like you said, all the turkey recipes from what you get up there, you know?
But if I do, it usually is, just throw it on the grill and cook it until it feels like it's done.
And cook it till, as our moms and grandmas used to do. There's no more juices coming out of it. Then you know it's done. Like, no, that's not how it should be done at all. But I did read somewhere about this thing called reverse searing. And it's not actually, it sounds fancier than it really is. All it means is if you've got a good temperature probe, like a digital thermometer, you know, and I've got one of those, is put that into your steak and then put it in a 250 degree oven. And after about 20 plus minutes or so, let that internal temperature of the steak get to 125. And that way, when you then throw it on a cast iron skillet, which is heated as hot as it gets, you're going to get it perfect on the outside without overdoing it in order to get that middle to 135 to 150, depending on how you like your steak. So it's kind of a two-step process, but boy, I sure do enjoy it.
That just seems to make sense. I feel like that's probably a great way to do it.
Yeah. And then the other thing I do is, and again, you're kind of hesitant in the beginning, but I just salt the crap out of it in the beginning. I'd read that in like a New York Times article and a bunch of other articles. And it's like, so before you do it, I've got this kosher salt, really coarse, and you put that on both sides, and then you kind of pat the juices off the top before cooking. And again, it sounds counterintuitive, but there's still plenty of juice on the inside, and whatever it does, it helps. They give all the scientific explanations for what it does to the meat. I don't care. I just want it to taste good, and it appears that I've stumbled upon just the right thing, but maybe folks disagree. If they got a better way of doing it, they can let us know at 844-967-2789. But the steaks were so good last night that I felt compelled to share that with you. So we'll let Aaron consider any other ideas that come in as well. And don't forget, our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And in case you have your own recipes that you want to share with us. And by the way, I've mentioned before, and I always say it jokingly, but we've got a mailing address, Post Office Box 27, Chippewa Falls, 54729. And I'll tell you what, you you want to send us your recipes, send us grandma's old recipe cards. We'll definitely take it that way. Mark from Prairie du Sac joining us this morning. And Mark, you, cast iron skillet is the way you go or no? Oh, I'm not hearing. Are you there, Mark?
Yeah, I'm here. I mean, if you
there you are. Yeah. Hey, good morning. Yeah, go ahead.
Good morning. If you want to have great cornbread, what you do is you heat the cast iron skillet as you're mixing up your cornbread mix. Some of those take like 10 minutes to rehydrate. At least the one on Uncle Bob's Red Mill does. And that takes like 10 minutes to get the your batter rehydrated with the buttermilk. And then you pull that cast iron skillet out. Careful as you do it because it's going to be screaming hot. Pour that into the hot batter in. Pour the batter into the hot skillet, and you get a nice thick crust on your cornbread. Tastes pretty darn good.
Oh, Mark, I like that. My wife is a huge cornbread fan, and she's not listening right now. She's already started her work shift. So, needless to say, I am going to be pursuing this, and I will be reporting back to you, Mark. Thank you very much. I appreciate that so much. I'm not sure how we allowed the. Thanks, Mark. I'm not sure how we allowed the first segment to turn into food chat, but I'm kind of glad we did. I just got myself a good cornbread recipe out of this. Anyway, we'll take a break. We'll see what else is happening in the Up North News newsletter and on our social media sites, and then we'll talk farm safety later in the hour. But we've got our weatherology forecast next. And if you missed it, if you missed the Brewers and Cardinals game last night, trust me, you didn't really miss it. It wasn't good. Scores and highlights next. You're Up North. The St. Louis Cardinals have a chance to rest their legs before tonight's game because they were running the bases an awful lot last night. The Cardinals beat the Brewers by a final score of 18-1. The Cardinals had the Cardinals already had the game in hand. It was 8-1 going into the eighth inning. Then they had a 10-run eighth inning that included a grand slam. And so the Brewers will move on to game two of this three-game series with the Cardinals coming up tonight. Wade Miley on the mound in Oshkosh. You can listen to the game on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM. And news from the center in Richland Center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. Up next is Jennifer Vachitsky from Weatherology, who's going to tell us again, about a gorgeous day and, then maybe a bump in the road. And again, we're going to talk later about how Wisconsin drivers don't have to deal with winter conditions anymore, but do have to look out for farm equipment. Much in the same way Jennifer's forecast, you no longer have to worry about, a snow brush or a shovel, but you need to know whether there's going to be an umbrella in that forecast. And here's Jennifer to tell us more now. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, that's a great point, too. Now kind of shifting gears into the spring and summer type of forecast coming in. So today it looks like an above average day for everyone, lingering in the mid to upper 70s across the board, as we should be around about the upper 60s, around 70 instead. Looks like sunshine or becoming mostly sunny for most. A few isolated areas of potentials for shower chances this afternoon. Madison, Waukesha, up to Oshkosh and Wisconsin Rapids, but very slight chances for those areas, and the day should end off on a dry note for them. In northern and west central Wisconsin, those folks could see some areas of patchy smoke coming in today due to the Canada wildfires, so something to keep in mind for those areas. Looking at a cold front dropping in for tomorrow, a pretty significant drop in temperatures for most, lingering in the 60s, upper 50s around Milwaukee, but dry and sunny here for your Wednesday. For the second half of the work week, it does look like chances for showers and storms come into play for everyone, starting Thursday afternoon from Wausau over to Amory and Baldwin, and starting in the evening hours in the southern parts of the state. A brief increase in temperatures for Thursday as a quick warm front pushes through back into the 70s for most, a little bit cooler towards Lake Michigan, and then still a chance for some rain on Friday, and cooler once again with highs dropping back into the 60s as another cold front comes into the area. It's going to be either at or just slightly below average for everyone by Friday.
Jennifer, I cannot believe I didn't connect the dots on this. Noticing last night, the sunset was gorgeous. It's, further north than ever before, as we get into the year, but so very red. And I'd forgotten that it doesn't take much for any wildfires, especially in Canada for us, but anywhere out west, to really add some color to that sunset. And we are in that time of year again, aren't we?
We are. Yeah, that's starting to come up.
All right, Jennifer, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
That's our daily weather forecast from Jennifer Vachitsky from Weatherology. And we always appreciate her joining us to tell us what all is going on. All right, taking a look at Up North News on social media, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, everything like that. But there are a couple of stories on our Facebook feed that I wanted to share with you. And that includes a story that our national correspondent, Kia Vakil, put up that talks about, again, what Republicans are looking to cut in exchange for not causing a recession. And, you know, because, again, if the debt ceiling is not allowed to be extended based on spending that Republicans had already approved, including $2 trillion in tax cuts geared for the wealthy, if there is no deal and America defaults, it's going to create a recession, at least in the short term. Many people are going to go jobless for a while. And what Republicans want instead are massive cuts. In a bill that they approved in the House, they don't spell out the exact cuts. Essentially, it's a CYA method that they're using so that folks can say, well, we never said we were going to cut veterans benefits. It doesn't specifically say veterans benefits in the bill. No, but math tells you that if you're not cutting defense spending, but you're cutting everything else by something like 22%, and if you're not spelling out that veterans health benefits aren't going to get cut, then yeah, veterans health benefits are going to get cut. So Kia put up another one about how spending on various nutrition programs like Meals on Wheels would see its funding slashed, and that's going to deprive millions of senior citizens across the country of, you know, sorely needed meals that they can't otherwise prepare for themselves. And so you can hear more from a woman with Meals on Wheels America describe just what the Republican spending cut bill would do to them. Another story a little closer to home says that Governor Evers is one third of the way toward a goal of having Wisconsin plant 75 million trees by the year 2030. The governor issued an executive order back in 2021 directing the DNR to work with public and private and nonprofit organizations to reach that target. And there is a link on the story in the Up North News Facebook page where you can learn more about the efforts. And, you know, perhaps you'd like to be a part of that too. It's interesting to note that when it comes to, you know, climate issues, we have heard Republican legislators also embrace the goal of planting tens of millions of trees, but then very little else, as if the planting of trees is going to do it in and of itself, is going to do it enough of it. That's not going to be enough to address climate concerns. And in fact, we're going to hear more about that tomorrow morning in our 6 o'clock hour with Melissa Baldoff, who's going to begin a new weekly series where we're going to do a climate check on climate issues around Wisconsin, climate issues in the legislature, in Congress, the ways that, again, whatever your feelings about a changing climate, there are definitely, you would agree, things that we can do to pollute less, to just, you know, be better stewards of what was given to us in terms of natural resources, and to also consider the policies that would bring about economic benefits, you know, whether it's building, you know, the wind turbines of the future or the green energy, you know, the electric vehicles and things like that. Surveys have shown there are plenty of people that approve of green energy policies who don't necessarily believe that climate change is a major problem, but they at least see it as an economic opportunity. So those are just some of the things that Melissa Baldoff is going to talk about with me on a regular basis on Wednesday mornings. And so do tune in during our 6 a.m. Hour tomorrow, and we will have more to say about that. As I was mentioning in the last hour, the Durham investigation turned out to be a dud, that there really wasn't any steak, but just sizzle. See what I did from our last segment there? When it came to investigating the Russia investigation, and that it turned out to be a nothing burger. I'm caught up with burgers and steaks here for some reason. But it's not a big surprise when you consider, and we haven't said much about this, but that there was another quote unquote investigation that didn't find anything. And it came from, again, the House of Representatives as they were taken over by Republicans, and that the Oversight Committee and its chair, they were promising big things. They said that the Biden family was corrupt and that they were going to investigate and they were going to, you know, blow the cover off the Biden family financial ties. And we've heard so much since January, when Kentucky Republican James Comer took over the Oversight Committee. Lots of allegations, but he couldn't, you know, prove anything in any of those TV interviews. He said, well, let the investigation work itself out. And he would be asked in these interviews, well, what about the very real tangible things that we're seeing from Donald Trump? Are you going to be investigating those? And his answer was always, well, you know, that's not really a priority for him. It's more about looking into the Bidens. Well, 4 months later, the committee put out a report that acknowledged that they haven't really found any evidence of wrongdoing, but they continue to make all of these insinuations that the Bidens are involved in some kind of criminal conduct and corruption. And they did describe how some of the president's relatives received pay from foreign sources. And while they described that as a form of influence peddling, they could not actually provide anything that you would consider evidence of influence peddling and that would lead directly to the president in terms of any questionable conduct. And this really is, you know, Benghazi part two. And it's worth noting that the original Benghazi investigation worked. It did exactly what it was intended to do, which had nothing to do with actually looking into the facts on the ground in Libya at the time of the attack in Benghazi. It had everything to do, as Republicans admitted in Congress at the time, with making former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton look bad. And it worked. Enough people in 2016 either voted for Trump instead of Hillary Clinton based on what they'd heard or suspected about her, or they stayed home in 2016 and didn't vote because they had these doubts that maybe Hillary Clinton wasn't on the up and up, when the fact of the matter remains, she remains more qualified than anybody who has ever run for president in this country in terms of her preparation, in terms of her professional experience. But when you spend decades smearing somebody with insinuations, don't be surprised that it ultimately works. And that's what's happening here with Congressman Comer of Kentucky running the Oversight Committee, which has had a sterling reputation that the Oversight Committee does not take on investigations without firm evidence, without just cause. It does not get used as a political tool until now, which is exactly what Comer is doing. Even in the press conference that showed that there was nothing criminal, Comer said, quote, "I want to be clear. This committee is investigating President Biden and his family's shady business dealings to capitalize on Joe Biden's public office that risks our country's national security." Now, notice I said that with a very intentional dose of sarcasm, because I can't just say, well, we're not going to talk about him. We're not going to give Comer any publicity. I actually want people to know about what's happening in this Oversight Committee. Unfortunately, you're going to have too many legacy media that simply engage in both sidesism, and they're going to read that quote straight. They're going to say, Congressman Comer says the committee is investigating President Biden and his family's shady business dealings to capitalize on Joe Biden's public office that risks the country's national security. And people are going to say, ooh, that doesn't sound good at all. Much like they did with Benghazi. And so as these reports come out from Congressman Comer and from John Durham that show a whole lot of nothing. We're going to tell you about them because they count otherwise on people either just hearing a little bit and suspecting something or actually believing what they're delivering hook, line, and sinker. And that's not the case at all when it comes to the now political abuse and weaponization of the Republican House Oversight Committee. We're going to be talking farm safety with Hans Breitenmoser and a guest coming up next. You're up north. Run away, run away.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
In a bit, we're going to be talking to UW Extension Regional Crops Educator Scott Royce and Hans Breitenmoser about farm safety by and large, but we'll also talk a bit about soil management and making sure that things stay clean out there in our natural resources. And so to that end, I wanted to pass along first one story from the Associated Press about how one of Wisconsin's largest dairy operations has reached a settlement with state environmental regulators that calls for the company to eventually stop spreading liquid manure in exchange for avoiding groundwater monitoring requirements. That deal will put an end to a lawsuit that Kennard Farms filed against the DNR last year. Their operation includes 16 industrial farms with about 8,000 cows. It has struggled with agricultural pollution for years as contaminants have seeped into private wells, especially around Kewaunee County, which has relatively shallow soil and does a poor job of filtering water. And so it makes the area especially susceptible to groundwater contamination. And so making sure that you have a good nutrient management plan on your farms and good soil is the job of the many excellent UW Extension agents that we have around the state. And one of the people who works with them closely is our friend Hans Breitenmoser, who joins us, a dairy farmer from up in Lincoln County, as we get into the topic of keeping things clean and then the topic of keeping things safe. Hans, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
How's it going up there? I was asking you about spring planting, and it seemed to be going fine in this particular pocket of western Wisconsin, but I also know in Minnesota things are running really late, and I've got to think up closer to you where there was a much deeper snowpack that things are running a little late as far as planting goes.
Yeah, I would say we're a little behind schedule here. We just got a lot of rain this spring, and it just took a long time for things to dry out. But for the past few days, things have been drying out, so we're hopeful to get some seed in the ground here in the next couple of days. We did quite a bit of tillage here in this last little snap here, and then prior to that, we were able to get some manure hauled. So we're starting to get things going.
I got to tell you, the farm across the street from us here, most years the field just on the other side of the street from us is corn, but some years it's other things. And my wife grew up on a dairy farm, and she's watching the first little shoots come out, and she says, you know, one of the neighbors told me it was alfalfa, but that sure looks like peas or oats. And she is really rooting for peas, because then that neighbor's going to catch Sherry out there with a little Ziploc bag, you know, trying to get as many fresh peas as she can. Not that I doubt your crop report or your planting report, Hans, but I'm going to go to an expert. Scott Royce is here, a crops and soils educator. Scott, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Pretty good. I'd be in a little bit better shape if we were fully planted. You know, it's May 16th here today, so I always feel better when all of the crops in the area are good to go and up and running. But we're moving along. Things, you know, this is one of in the four counties that I work in. We are blessed with a lot of different soil types. So the sandier soil types, we've missed a couple of these spring rains, and we're getting not close to done yet, but moving that direction with planting. And then on the slightly heavier soils, they've gotten a couple extra rain events, and we haven't gotten much done down there yet. So a lot of variability again this year.
Oh, very much so. We were at my in-laws' farm in Manitowoc County, and yeah, they were just itching to get back into the fields and finish some of the work. You mentioned the four counties, Scott. Tell us where you are and who all you work with and where.
Well, I'm primarily a crop soils educator, and I work in moving from east to west. I work in Marinette, Oconto, Shawano, and Langlade counties.
And tell folks more about as a crops and soils educator, what some of your day-to-day work is like.
It varies a lot from day to day. That's one of the enjoyable parts about my position, actually. It can be all the way from troubleshooting with a farm, but the primary, of course, is working with educational programming. At this time of the year, of course, the educational programming is a little bit fewer and farther between because farms have a lot of stuff to do, so they're not going to be coming to events. But one thing I will be starting actually tomorrow is the first crop alfalfa scissors clip monitoring and pest management project. So I go through different fields in the four county region in which I work and do some scouting for the various insect and disease issues that alfalfa can manifest at this time of the year, and then also watch the maturity levels of the alfalfa so that farms can find that data on our various local websites and the statewide website and know exactly when to cut first crop alfalfa.
Would it be fair to describe you as part of you and the rest of the extension and ag agents as kind of an early warning system in that every farmer can only see their own farm, whereas you're getting much more of like a 30,000 foot view and can spot trends, whether it's related to, you know, pests or other conditions that might hamper crops?
Yeah, certainly between Extension and the hundreds of certified crop advisors that work across the state, great opportunities for producers to know what's going on. One advantage that people like Hans and I have is that we're a little bit further north in the state, so we tend to get some early warning systems, as you mentioned, because they use, you know, a lot of those problems usually kind of move from south to north. Not always, but they tend to.
Hans, you want to talk a bit about the value of extension agents and other folks that do what Scott does on a regular basis?
Yeah, I think I've always been a big fan of extension. When I was on the county board for 10 years, I was always on the oversight committee in Lincoln County that took care of extension. Unfortunately, here in Lincoln County, we, since I've left the board, the powers that be decided that to defund extension. So our relationship with extension here in Lincoln County has changed, not for the better. But I think the work that Scott does is very important. I think that extension has had to evolve over the years because of what we have access to as producers, you know, via the internet and other means. It makes Scott's job different, but I definitely still think there's lots of relevance there because, as you pointed to earlier, Pat, we're, you know, we get pretty caught up on our own farms and looking at our own things. So it's nice to have sort of that clearinghouse of university experts that can look at the bigger picture and, you know, be involved in trends and that type of stuff and bring that back close to our own farm gate.
Yeah, that whole notion of, you know, essentially defunding, you know, the extension work is part of an ongoing, unfortunate political battle that now, you know, farmers are being caught up in, and that, you know, anything public sector, you know, is basically attacked and said, well, the private marketplace can handle all of this, when history continues to show that no, it most decidedly cannot on its own. But we can talk about something that we can all agree on, and that is the need for, you know, increased and ever vigilant farm safety. And that includes, you know, the public being safe around farms when they're traveling. Hans, you suggested this topic. Scott, you were kind enough to come in and talk a bit about it. And so in setting it up, Scott, I mean, is there any way to say it other than at planting season and again at harvest season, some folks just simply forget they've got to be patient when they come across tractors and other farm machinery?
Yeah, that's probably the best way to say it, is that as regular drivers, we tend to both lose our focus sometimes and also lose our patience, as you said, because the reality is that modern vehicles are actually theoretically safer than they always used to be, but they also seem to have more bells and whistles that can make us lose our attention real fast. So when we see those tractors and harvesting machinery and planters and all that kind of thing on the road in front of us, we forget that, well, they're going about a third of the speed that we are, give or take, and we catch up to them really quickly. And that creates some extra issues. And also, of course, the size of modern farm equipment, although it's in reality, compared to the equipment that I used when I was on the farm as a kid, we couldn't fold up most of our equipment. So going down the roadways there, people simply had to wait for you to get past because you couldn't do anything else. But nowadays, equipment is really much more road friendly in that we can fold things up better and actually have a narrower pathway, but it still is moving more slowly and it's hard to see around, and people just lose their patience and try to pass in spots they absolutely shouldn't, and oftentimes is illegal, and then problems happen real quickly.
And Hans, I assume you see things like that happening in Lincoln County too often. I mean, even one time is too often, but that this kind of thing still happens.
Oh yeah. Yep. And it's always tragic because, somebody's going to get hurt, and we don't want anybody to get hurt. And it is interesting that the new modern equipment that you'll see nowadays, has more hazard lights and flashing lights and so forth. So that helps people see it. But it's still big and heavy. And the thing that I would caution drivers about when you come up behind farm equipment, try and anticipate where they're going. I mean, I know it's hard for non-farmers to figure out what the guy in the cab of the tractor is thinking, but just assume for a little bit that they're going to make a left-hand turn. And that's when bad things happen. When somebody tries to pass and a tractor is trying to make that left-hand turn into a field. So kind of maybe think about field driveways and that type of stuff. And don't pass that farm equipment unless you're real, real sure that they see you and are aware of you, and you can make that pass safely.
I actually have a little story from personal experience to share from last weekend, being in rural Minnesota on our way to Northfield, Minnesota, and we encountered, I don't know if it's a sprayer, it's one of those where the cab sits really high and you could almost drive underneath it, and you make the joke about the opening scene of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. we did not drive underneath it, but we, again, kept my distance. Knew that at some point it was going to, do something, slowed down, pulled over a little bit to the right. And so I assumed it was signaling me that if I wanted to pass, this was the time to pass. And in fact, I did so safely, but then it went ahead and made a right turn as well. Though I don't recall seeing any lights or signals or anything like that. But if I'd have just waited a little bit longer, he would have turned off the road entirely and I wouldn't have had to get into the passing lane. Mm-hmm. But it makes me wonder, Scott, to the extent we're talking about drivers and watching out, but obviously for producers who are listening as well, where does their responsibility lie for themselves and or their equipment when they're on the roads?
Well, we do have the Implements of Husbandry law in the state of Wisconsin, which does require all farms to maintain the lighting and the reflective tape and manage their implements that are on the roadways to be at certain widths and all those types of things. One of the things that gets tricky for a lot of people, and I have to, even myself, even though I know equipment, I have to watch for this a little bit too on the roads at this time of the year, is that when you're coming up behind equipment, you see the flashing lights, and a lot of times you don't see the change in those flashing lights when they turn their turn signal on, because the only difference is that one side will stop flashing and then the other side will continue to flash. So that is something that although it's a good safety a tool to see those flashing lights, it actually makes it a little bit trickier for people to see when they turn their turn signals on, so it's easier to miss when you're behind them.
Yeah, exactly. And then one last note on that, both planting and harvesting, that sometimes farmers have to work well into the night. And if you even suspect you may be coming up on equipment at nighttime, be even more careful. Scott, I've only got a minute left, but I do want to come back to that first story about, these factory farms and spreading, liquid manure to the point where, I mean, it's just simple math. At some point, you can spread too much in any given area. Do we feel like we're making some progress in getting large producers to understand the math, and so that we have fewer incidents like this in Kewaunee County?
I believe so, yes, but it's also, as you mentioned, you know, in your intro with that story, that the soils in Kewaunee County do set themselves up for problems. And it's not that that's the only place in the state where that happens, but we do have very strong laws regarding nutrient management and manure management, and 99%+ of farms and situations are followed well so that we get the maximum economic value out of that manure, which, because it's amazing fertilizer. But then also at the same time minimize the environmental issues.
Got you. Scott Royce, Extension Crops and Soils Educator, and Hans Breitenmoser. Thank you so much both for bringing this to our attention. Hopefully we've helped things be a little bit safer because of your presence here. Thanks again.
Thanks, Pat.
When we come back, Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio will tell us about what's happening in the Wausau area. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes here on Up North News Radio.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man.
All right, so Chad Holmes joins us now from Bull Falls Radio, and Aaron's been using that as his walk-up music because Chad reports from everywhere, especially when he's doing sports across northern Wisconsin. Though I noticed Aaron used that tune for me yesterday when I was on Luke Mather's show, because apparently I get around the Northwoods as well, but I'm going to have to come up with better walk-up music. It suits you far better than me, Chad.
Oh, I'm sure you get around as well, Pat.
That's what it says on bathroom walls, but not to the extent, you know, that you do. You have been reporting, doing sports from under umbrellas and, you know, for all manner of conditions, but thankfully I started off the show this way as well. This is the best time of year because the mosquitoes aren't in full force yet. There's not, you know, I was eating outside last night and there wasn't no wasp or bee was trying to get into my beer or anything like that. So if you got to be outside doing this, this ain't the worst.
Yesterday was a gorgeous day here in central Wisconsin. I think it was that way throughout much of the state, but I was talking to somebody the other day at a ball game. It feels like the spring sports should just be starting. Because yes. The weather has been so bad, and now we're near the end of it, and now the weather's starting to turn around. So, but it was, you know, this time of year is, I agree, I've always felt like the spring is the best part of the year for me personally.
I don't mean to put you on the spot sports-wise, but are there any top storylines that you're sharing? Where are we in terms of, you know, getting close to the postseason? What all is happening?
Well, we actually, softball starts their postseason Thursday for some teams, mainly next week, and then baseball after that. So spring sports has a different feel than the others for whatever reason. It always feels like it's a little bit, you know, I think it's because we're outside after being indoors for all winter. It feels like there's a little bit of a lighter touch to it, which is actually good because the winter is such a long season. But yeah, the playoffs do get underway for the softball next week and then baseball after that.
Oh yeah, and there's a lot of you know, makeup games when the weather isn't quite right and everything that's happening. If you will forgive me for encroaching on your time here, I want to follow up. In our last segment, we were speaking with an Extension ag agent and a Lincoln County dairy farmer, and we were talking about how one of these mega farms has reached a settlement to eventually stop spreading liquid manure in exchange for avoiding groundwater monitoring requirements. And maybe I'll talk more about this tomorrow, but I consider that to basically be a slap on the wrist for these huge operations that are, you know, really putting our water in danger. Just to make the point that I'm not going to tell you that I'm against factory farms. I am going to tell you, if they're going to exist, you got to treat them like factories then. This isn't, you know, this isn't ma and pa and they just, you know, put the manure wherever they think it's convenient. I mean, you really need a plan for handling the waste from 8,000 cows or something like that. And I'm sure that all around, you know, Bull Falls radio world, there are folks that have these same concerns that, you know, the it's always been about, you know, farmers have to get big, you know, get big or get out of business. But my goodness, for everybody else that has to live in that area, we don't want to see the watershed full of, you know, nutrients, as they like to call manure.
Unfortunately, it seems like it's not just even within that realm. So often, when you look at so-called big fines or what it looks like on the paper, maybe a big penalty, it's not. I mean, you got to look. Does it cause any kind of what you call pain for breaking the rules?
Sure.
And we don't see that, I don't think, enough where, you know, somebody can, you know, make, you know, get a, let's just throw a number out there, say a $100 million fine. But if you made $500 million in profit by breaking the rules, then what's the point of it?
It's the cost of doing business. That's all it is.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, for the fairness, unfortunately, again, the mentality, I think, generally in this country is big is better. And it's not, that's not the case. And it really makes it unfair to those who are competing against that kind of business.
Very much so. And it's not just the farming end of it. We also have to talk about the mining and the exploratory drilling that was recently approved, you know, not too far from where you are. This is more of a Taylor County is where some of this, you know, exploratory drilling will be for certain precious metals and things like that. But, you know, unfortunately, when you do that, you know, you could be leading to sludge, heavy metals, everything. You've had Nancy Stensel on your program. I've had Nancy Stensel on as well. And she put up a post recently about, you know, the damage that can be done in that Yellow River area. And that stuff that flows all the way down here to Lake Wissota. And nobody around Lake Wissota knows that there's about to be exploratory drilling, you know, up in Taylor County. And these are the things that, you know, very few people are watching. But I think I'm very thankful for folks like Nancy Stensel that do that.
You hit it on the head right there. Very few people are watching. And the thing about it is the groups that are trying to do this, they don't slow down. They just keep coming. They keep waiting for people to get either tired or to turn their head for a moment. And you're right. Folks like Nancy are so vitally important because, and the thing is, it's a natural aspect. We've talked about it with other folks, I'm sure you have as well, about how, you know, we so many people have so much on their plate in their lives. To have somebody like Nancy Stensel and the people that work with her to try to watch, because again, these groups never stop. It reminds me of the Terminator. They will not stop until they get what they want. And it doesn't matter what it means to the future. And that's the thing that just gets very frustrating in situations like this, because they will not stop. And they got the finances and the money behind them to continue to keep coming and coming and coming until they're able to get what they want. And that, it's so difficult to fight.
It is. That's why, yeah, the vigilance has to be eternal. Tell us something about who you've had or who you're going to have on Bull Falls Radio weekday afternoons at 2.
I'm really excited because this is not coming up this week, but next Tuesday, I have lined up Senator Baldwin to come into the studio, which I'm really excited about. Because obviously, there's some rumblings that our 7th District Congressman, Tom Tiffany, is going to be running for the Senate. So I think maybe that the senator thinks, hey, got to start talking to the folks here in the 7th because, you know, got the home field advantage for Mr. Tiffany here. But I'm really excited to have, you know, it's fun to talk, you know, on, you know, through technology, but to actually be sitting across from a senator, I'm really looking forward to that next week.
That's great. Chad, appreciate that so much. Hope you have a great show. And thanks for spending a little time with us today.
Absolutely.
It's always great. Hey, speaking of having folks on who are office holders, we have the State Senate Democratic leader, Melissa Agard, is going to be joining us tomorrow to talk about her grassroots tour about legalizing marijuana in Wisconsin. And that includes stops in Wausau and in the Chippewa Valley coming up. We also have, as I mentioned before, Melissa Baldoff talking about climate issues and Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio. So it's a morning of Melissa's tomorrow. Melissa Agard, Melissa Baldoff, Melissa Kay, all joining us from 6 to 8 tomorrow morning. You can catch what I do on Facebook. Just go to Pat Kreitlow Up North. And again, you can follow what we do all the time on the web, upnorthnewswi.com. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you back here 6 a.m. tomorrow.